That home was like shit. 4321. You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 399.99. Gotcha! It's Punk News Podcast 454. Double fake out. We gotcha! Podcast. It's Tom and John. No Adam this week. Tom, I think Adam's having some sort of emotional crisis this week or something. So hopefully he'll be back next week. We'll see.
Adam is in a constant state of emotional crisis.
Do you feel as though Adam's having more emotional crises than he used to, or it's the same ratio?
I'm going to say it's more often than it used to be, but no, Adam is a busy man with a young family, and you know, I completely understand. I mean, there's, you know, did you ever play like league softball or anything, John?
No.
So
I played rugby, but that's not, you mean softball or like sports?
You know what? Let me put it in a different context, because there's a lot of musicians I'm sure that listen to this. So when you play in a band on a regular basis, you try to get together at least once a week to practice, right? And you try and you have to drag yourself out of the house, and you're just like, oh God, I got to go practice. I really don't want to do this right now, blah, blah, blah. And then when you get there, you always have a good time and you're always glad you did it. But the act of dragging yourself to it gets more and more difficult. And it's like the same if you play like league softball. You're like, oh, I just worked on Monday and now I have to go play softball at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. And you're just like, once you get there, you always have fun. You're glad you do it. And I think I think Adam might be having that issue. Might be getting harder and harder for him to drag himself to his dungeon basement to do this. Even though when we all get together, I think he enjoys it. But you know, I don't know if that's a good analogy or not. But it's my analogy.
So you think Adam does? See, I actually look forward to the podcast every week. You feel as though Adam sees it as a burden, not as a time of relaxation.
If you're very busy, it does feel like a slog, or if you haven't seen your wife for 3 days and then all of a sudden you're going to hide in the back room or whatnot, it can. But no, I because that's how I feel about it, is I have a hard time getting up for it, but I always enjoy it once I get here. Well, always is a strong word, but 90% of the time
you have a hard time getting up and then you enjoy it once it's happened, you're saying.
I didn't say I have a hard time getting it up, John. I said I have a hard time getting up for it. There's a fine line there. I am old, but I'm not that old, my friend.
Sex jokes. That's what you get when Adam's not on the pod. I will point out, Tom, that Adam, well, actually, Ricky was the most sex squeamish, and Adam was the second most sex squeemish.
Yes. Yes.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's. You know, I think it's, I kind of think it goes back to how you grew up. Like, we're pretty easy going around here, and we laugh about just about everything, but not everybody grew up like that, you know? Like, we I have 4 children, and, you know, it's just, sometimes you just end up, you know, seeing each other naked. It's just the way it works when you're all in close quarters, so you can't be too squeamish about it. I hear my 15-year-old son just laughing hysterically in the back room. I wonder if he's eavesdropping.
I'll tell you, Tom, not today.
My 50-year-old son, who's not interested in anybody, who's not interested in being seen naked at all, is laughing hysterically in the back room. Anyway.
You know, Tom, you and I, not today, but sometime maybe we should do the sex episode part 2, because I still have people bring the sex episode up to me, surprisingly.
Sex episode? Was I on that?
Yeah, it was just you and me talking about sex.
It was so memorable. I don't even remember.
Well, anyways, listen.
Was that the one where we wore strategically placed tube socks, Red Hot Chili Pepper style?
It was. Yes, indeed, it was.
That was the only episode where we looked each other in the eye constantly.
Indeed. Listen, speaking of looking people in the eye, I saw the Rolling Stones last night. Rolling Stones are my favorite band. And Tom, it was awesome.
Really? God, they're in their 70s now, John.
Charlie Watts is 81 or 82. I got to say, there is a reason they're the greatest band, the world's greatest rock band is what people call them. I mean, they were amazing. Mick Jagger, he's definitely been taking vocal lessons because he sounds, honestly, he probably sounds better than he has in like 20 years. Because in the 90s, his voice really dropped and got kind of blockier. And then I noticed starting in the 2000s, he kind of got like, he kept that blues man boom, but kind of got some of the sensitivity back that he had in like the 60s and 70s. And so now he's got the power and the sensitivity in his voice. And I got to say, I mean, he's like 76, but unlike some of the other musicians that are like 76, and I'm not dissing them, but like David Bowie or even like Steven Tyler or even like Leonard Cohen, who they get that kind of old man warble in their voice. Jagger yep. doesn't have that. He kind of went the other route and got the blues man howl, you know. He sounded amazing. People talk about Keith Richards being the greatest guitar player of all time, and he is. And it's not because he's, like, fancy or even because he does, like, that Eric Clapton thing where he, like, you know, I don't know, does, like, super sensitive stuff.
He's a rhythm guitar player. You know, Eric Clapton's known as a lead guitar player. Keith Richards is a rhythm guitar player, man. He beats out bar chords and open chords.
I think what it is there's a certain technique and touch that Keith Richards
plays. Yeah, he's got a feel for it, no question.
So like, he's got a very, very unique way of playing and a very unique sound that no one else can seem to, even when people are covering the Rolling Stones, they can't emulate that sound he has. So I'm wondering if, I mean, he's talked about his technique, but I'm wondering if he's got like a trick that he does that he still doesn't tell anybody, you know, which he might, you know. It was mostly a greatest hit set, couple rarities, but it was awesome. I'm thinking this has got to be the last time. So if you get the chance to see him, go see him. It was cool.
They only played one Midwestern show in the entire run. They played Chicago. That was it. I think it was midweek. This is a very short run of shows that they're doing.
And then other than that, I saw two Buzz Australian bands. I saw Aim on the Sniffers and the Chats. Tom, one band was actually was pretty punk rock, and the audience skewed a little older. Not super older, but a little older. One audience was total frat boy brocore, like total frat boys, and skewed younger. And one band was amazing. It was super amazing. The other band was pretty cool. Good, very good, but not amazing. Which do you think was
weird? I'm going to say Amel and the Sniffers were amazing.
They were, Tom. Wow. I mean, she was so the whole band was so energetic. It was explosive. And plus, they've done that thing that, like, when a punk band is sort of in their first prime, like, every song is catchy. And even if it doesn't have, like, a chorus, people sing along with it. Kind of like, honestly, kind of like Rancid during Outcome the Wolves. Not that Amel sounds like that. But, like, people sing, like, every line. And it was awesome. I mean, it really was something awesome.
Cool.
Who do you think was Frat Boy Brocore?
It had to be the Chats, right?
Yeah, they were cool, but the audience was, I mean,
I must say that I don't know that band at all.
Chats are actually more popular than Amel and Sniffers. They're extreme.
Really?
They sold out two shows in Philly at $20 a ticket, which is a very high price for a punk show in Philly. In Philly, punk shows $10 to $12.
They're not a real punk band.
Well, actually, they're kind of not, because they're to like a major label. And I talked about this on the show before. There's some kind of weird major label secret influence. I'm not against major labels, but there's something hidden about the band. But I mean, honestly though, the band themselves were really, really good. If you put them at like a punk house show and had them in all black instead of kind of like, you know, purposefully like thrift store clothes, you know what I mean? Then people would say, oh man, this is the rising band, and they would be on the cover of Maximum Rock and Roll. They were really, really good. I don't know if they quite lived up to the hype. The audience was obnoxious. They were super like pushy, but not like pushy in the good way at a punk show, like kind of just obnoxious drunk pros. But on the other hand, it's a punk show, so that's kind of fair game, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, you should go see them both. Definitely see Amel. Chats, I dug them. I don't know if they're amazing, but Amel and the Sniffers are amazing.
I've had a rare, so it's July, today is July the 24th. I have not been to a show in the month of July. I usually average at least like three a month. There's just has been nothing that has floated my boat. And August looks better, but yeah, I have been home too much. Maybe not. Well, Tom, maybe not home too much. Tom, but I've been long. Next Thursday I'm going to see COC and Crowbar. That's the first show I've been to. It'll be the first show in a month.
Very 90s, Thomas. Very 90s.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? Even 80s.
Yeah. you know, COC and Crowbar, and there's a couple. What's the other band that's always linked with COC? Oh, I Hate God. Those bands, like, they never.
Well, they're the New Orleans band. Pepper from COC is from New Orleans also. And Crowbar's from New Orleans.
Yeah, but I mean, they're all kind of like that grunge punk, not grunge punk, like, Sludge punk, yeah. And, like, they never get bigger, but they never get smaller. They're just kind of always around, you know?
Yeah. Well, COC, they're obviously bigger. I mean, it's 25 years ago now, but they had a platinum album 25 years ago.
They did?
Maybe a couple.
They have not rich. I mean, those guys are broke as hell, Tom.
Huge. I don't know if they are or not. Probably because they smoke weed like it's going out of business. Yeah. Remember when they played with I saw them with Clutch when Pepper first came back. So I actually saw them a couple times as a trio before Pepper. And I actually like that version of the band too. But anyway,
I saw that version open for Danzig once.
Okay. Because the Pepper version is definitely more the Sabbath-y stuff. And without him, they are more of a punk hardcore band, I would say.
I like that version better, honestly.
But they opened for Clutch, and they had their own bus, so they're not that broke.
Yeah, and honestly, once I got to pause you. A lot of bands go broke with the stupid bus. Like, a lot of bands,
dude,
like,
you go within 30 feet of their bus, your eyes started burning.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of bands go broke with the bus. They have the bus, but they really shouldn't because they can't afford it. You know, buses are super expensive.
I saw Sepultura still plays, you know, without Max Cavalera.
Yeah. It's the guy Andre Kissinger, I think is his name.
Yeah, the guitar player, and he's actually was not the founding guitar player. So they actually Sepultura is a band that has no original members.
So is Napalm Death.
Yeah, that's true. But they haven't forever. But they've had the same. True, and that Kissinger, the guitar player, whatever his name is, he's been the guy for a long time. If we're being fair, and the bass player, so two of the guys are the same from the classic late '80s, early '90s. Because Sepultura was a great band, man. Rise and
Rise.
Yeah.
Even they Roots.
Even Roots. You're right. That was the last Max Cavalera. But anyway, they're great. They're a great band. But anyway, so I saw the new version of them. They were playing at this place in downtown GR called the Pyramid Scheme, which Max is out at 420. And there were like three buses there. And I can't remember who was opening for them. I think Destruction. Great old German thrash band. And the place was half full. There was 200 people there and three buses. I'm like, wow. There's no way that this is working out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of a bus. You know, I was talking to I forget who I was. Someone's like, you know, like, it's a big thing for like 80s hair, like Raven or Rat to play like in the middle of nowhere, you know, and there's like no one there. It's like,
yeah, it's always secondary markets. Yeah, always.
Actually, why do they play second? Like it's almost the same price to rent out a venue in Philly as it is in Scranton. So why not just do Philly?
I don't know. You know, because like Grand Rapids does not have like that secondary hair metal venue, but like Detroit. Those bands, they never play in Detroit. It's always like 20 miles north in the suburbs.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like it's not cheaper there. So why?
And these weird venues are kind of bikery usually, or. I obviously don't go to those shows, but like, hey, you know who's playing in Grand Rapids? I'm not going to go because my son and I are actually taking a road trip down to see DRI that same day. But
Striper.
Sebastian Bach is playing in Grand Rapids, and he's doing the entire first Skid Row album. Now that's some good hair metal.
Are you being serious or funny?
Well, a little of each. Because I really think that first Skid Row album holds up as good as almost anything from that era. Because that was the late '80s. That was definitely like the second wave of hair metal. But yeah, he's doing the entire album, even though Skid Row still exists. But they're trying to be like a real band. They're playing at like county fairs. He's playing at a pretty respectable size club, like 1500.
Yeah, actually.
Now, how many people will be there? I have no idea. So I'm gonna go see DRI play for 200 people in a skate park, maybe.
He's playing Lancaster, not Philadelphia, but it's sold out. So I mean, so it makes sense for him to do that. But like Rat or whatever, it's like why are you doing that? It's like, wouldn't it just be more enjoyable just to get a job at the grocery store or something? Like,
let it go, dude. They think they're only one hit song away from getting back on top.
Do you think that's what it is?
Or I don't know, ego. I don't know. Or it's the only way they know how to make a living. But it's so funny, isn't it? Because you know, I'm sure people who live in Philadelphia laugh at, like, because I live outside the city, right? I'm like 20 miles away, 15, 20 miles away from the city. And I know most city folks just assume we're rednecks out here, or farmers or whatever. And it certainly doesn't improve, like I'm sure Philadelphia feels the same way about Lancaster, and I'm sure it doesn't help, like, improve their image when you see that Sebastian Bach sold out the venue in Lancaster.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, yeah, we have, like, a, you know, a racetrack out here, like a short, like a, yeah. Tell people where you're from. They're like, hey, isn't there a racetrack over there? Like, But anyway, it's all good, man. It's all good.
Well,
I'm in my mid-40s. I grew up listening to my first musical love. And I'm not talking the first music I bought or first records I like, because, you know, I'm old enough. I bought Thriller and Purple Rain, and, you know, the pop music I listened to was the early and mid-80s pop music, but actually early 80s. By the mid-80s, man, I was a hair metal guy. That was my first musical love, was hair metal. Now, it didn't stick around long, but that was truly my first musical love, till I heard, like, the Ramones in 1987 or something. Like, wow, this is like the hair metal, except for all good all the time, and it doesn't have the stupid parts. Because I didn't really know what it was, you know?
Well, there you have it. Tom is a big fan of Sebastian Bach. And speaking of a person that's a fan of the Punk News podcast.
Dude, there's all these, like, gossip sites on the internet. One of the big ones is Blabbermouth.
Yeah.
You know Blabbermouth, right?
You want to see a rough comment section, go to Blabbermouth.
Oh, yeah, it's brutal. But they must have Sebastian Bach on speed dial. Because it's like, they ask him about everything. Even things that are totally irrelevant to him, like about Lady Gaga or something, but he cannot control himself. You know, he has to say something about everything. He's the dream blabbermouth guest, Sebastian Bach. That's right.
Well, there you have it. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. As always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Bart from Norway. Hey, guys. Thanks for the kind words and for keeping up the good work with the podcast. I especially like it when you talk about mental health issues with an open and non-judgmental mind. Punk and hardcore works as a sponge.
Can you do that?
I think he's referring to the Rob Miller conversation that we have.
I missed that one. I was off that week, yeah.
Punk and hardcore works as a sponge for people with mental health issues, so I think it's essential that we tackle these issues with great care, as you do. Maybe do a mental health episode special with educated guests instead of a band special. Just a thought. And actually, that's a really good idea. Bart.
That's why Adam's not here right now. He's taking a mental health week.
I actually think Bart has to, like, we're not going to, like, say this is the episode that solves mental health issues, but I think maybe we should bring in some mental health people and just kind of talk to them about that and maybe how it intersects with punk rock. I think that's a great idea, Bart, and I think we will do that.
I don't think that's a bad idea, but it definitely sounds a little academic for what we do, or a little over-intellectualizing what we do here.
I think our podcast is the most academic and intellectual of all the punk podcasts by far.
John, I just talked about Skid Row for like 10 minutes.
Well, true, but we also talk about mental health, Thomas.
That's true.
Bart.
The episodes I'm not on. The episodes I'm on, it's mostly Danzig and hair metal.
Bart says, you wanted me to write my name so you could pronounce it properly, but I don't know how to do that, so you can just call me Bart. Instead, I can tell you a little bit about myself. I've been into punk rock and hardcore since the mid-90s. I started my first band in 1997 and never looked back. I've been booking shows in my hometown of Bergen since 2000 and did a weekly punk radio show from 2000 to 2011. Then I started my label, Punk Platter, which translates as Punk Bjarte Punk Records. It's more clever in Norwegian. Currently, I'm still booking shows at festival. I'm doing a distro, and I'm recording an acoustic punk album with my son and his friends. They are 18. I am 39. I'm doing some lectures on evilly. I'm doing some lectures on evil, partially based in crass lyrics. Well, enough about me. Here's a new joke. How many punks does it take to change a light bulb? Answer, none, because punks don't change a thing. Stay wild, stay free from Norway. That's Bart. Bart, thanks for writing. We always love getting your mail. You can
Guilty,
always,
Bart.
You
Guilty.
Can always, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. Tom, let's play a song and then jump into our podcast. Let's see here. Tom, do you have a song to play? Because if not, then I guess I'll play a song.
Well, I don't have anything particularly relevant to play, but I will play a song gladly. So the reason I'm going to miss Sebastian Bach doing the entire first Skid Row album is because I'm actually going to drive down to beautiful Fort Wayne, Indiana, because my younger son just got his driving permit, or he's getting his driving permit. So we're going to go on a series of road trips where he has to go listen to his dad's favorite bands, which are all blasts from the past. So we're going down to Fort Wayne to see DRI play at a skate park, which I find I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. Every time I've seen DRI in the last many years, it's always been like a digi bar or whatever. So let's play some DRI, John. Let's do 5-year plan. I win, you lose.
Would you say the first
DRA?
DRI. Would you say that's the first crossover punk thrash band?
They were definitely in the conversation. They were kind of one of those bands where if they weren't the first to do it, they were kind of a band to help codify it.
Well, who did before them? Maybe Suicidal Tendencies?
Motorhead, maybe, or
But Motorhead does not sound like DRI or ST.
No, but it still had the mixture of, like, a punk and the metal. I don't know.
I mean, if you're just going to do straight punk and metal crossover.
You're talking thrash, crossover thrash?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe DRI. They said there was definitely, DRI was one of those bands where they could play with the Cro-Mags or they could play with Anthrax back in the day. They were definitely I guess I never really thought about it, but they were definitely, you know, they had the album crossover, and I don't know if I assume that they stole the term, that they didn't, you know, the coin wasn't termed because of that album, because that didn't come out till like 87 or something. But they were definitely, if they weren't the first, they were definitely among the forerunners.
Well, speaking of bands among the forerunners of band of genres and also forerunners of scams, Metallica. They're back in the news, Tom. Metallica, Billboard magazine.
So you talk about thrash, John. Metallica was genuinely a thrash band starting out. But whereas DRI was had that heavy punk political influence, Metallica had like the more proggy 70s new wave of British heavy metal influence. So even though they were both thrash bands, they were definitely widely different ends of the spectrum musically, you know?
And financially.
Yeah, why doesn't Metallica should bring DRI on tour with them? I mean, why are they bringing like freaking Godsmack on tour with them or Shinedown or something? Come on, guys, throw a bone to one of the old schoolers.
You're not implying that Metallica isn't about the art and are only about the money. You can't be implying that, Thomas. Yeah. Well, listen.
I didn't go see it last time they came to town, Jeff. I couldn't stand it. And now I know why.
You could afford it.
Well, and honestly, I'll talk about it later, but no, go ahead with the story because I might not be a coincidence that I didn't go see him.
So Billboard just released an in-depth and pretty damning report, which you should all read. You can get to it at the Punk News website. Basically, Billboard, it all comes down to one thing. They got a recorded phone conversation. The phone conversation was between a person called Vaughn Millett, who was an executive of Live Nation, but now no longer works for Live Nation, as well as, let's see here, the Live Nation president of U.S. Concerts, Bob Rue, and an unnamed wealth advisor turned event promoter that has direct connections to Metallica. And so in this phone conversation, Rue and the wealth advisor basically say, okay, instead of placing Metallica tickets on the Ticketmaster website for sale, we're going to send them directly to a secondary source such as StubHub, and we're going to inflate the prices before they even have a price to sell, chance to sell at the original price, and Metallica will be the actual sellers and Live Nation. So basically, they're scalping their own tickets, if you will. Billboard caught them on that and emailed them and said, we got you. And Billboard's response was, yes, we did that. They said, we have facilitated the quiet transfer of concert tickets directly into the hands of resellers through the years, though only at the request of the artists involved, who control where the tickets are initially sold. So basically, Metallica and Live Nation are basically giving everyone a little finger and say, F you, we don't even care what the law is, we don't even care what the rules are, we're just going to... We are scalpers, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, it's not a legal issue, is it? As much as sort of a shady, immoral kind of a situation?
Well, honestly, Tom, that's a great question, and maybe Live Nation will face another class action over this. But as three previous class
get another $5 voucher towards my $18 in fees per ticket.
As three previous class actions have shown, Live Nation is not scared of class action because it pays off for them in the long run anyway. To them, the class action is the price of doing business, you know. Yeah. I got to say, man, I mean...
I'm pretty sure Metallica's got some decent lawyers on retainer also.
Honestly, like Metallica, they just keep falling further. I was never a big Metallica fan, although I did respect the first four albums.
First four albums, dude, they're so good. I'm looking at Master of Puppets right now while I sit here. It's so good.
It's clear that Metallica, I mean, honestly, like Metallica's always, we treat our fans good, we treat our fans good, which is kind of true because if you're part of the Metallica fan club, they put out a lot of really neat exclusive material that you can only get if you're in the fan club.
Worst, lamest name ever for a fan club.
Oh, what's it called?
The Metallica Club.
Yeah, it's pretty, worse than Danzig Force?
Yeah, they should call it like the Creeping Dead or something. I don't know. They should like go back to a... I don't know.
So anyways, though, I mean, so, you know, there's talking and there's doing. Directly ripping off your fans for hundreds of dollars. And also, Metallica, don't you have enough money? You're the world's richest heavy metal band. Like, you really...
In their defense, they do give away a ton.
Give away a ton.
They literally give away $1 million+ at every stop.
Doing what?
To local charities and stuff. When they play Grand Rapids, I can't remember where they gave them.
Well, that's commendable.
Maybe not a million, but they have a foundation. But isn't that what all like rich people do when they have more money than they can spend? Start a foundation. Maybe it's a tax shelter.
But most foundations are tax shelters. You know. So, but I mean, honestly, like
Live Nation. But I know when they were in Grand Rapids, they went somewhere. I mean, they seem, you know, better than a lot of bands. But they can. They have that ability because they have so much money. You know, you don't expect Anthrax to give money to the local homeless shelter. You expect them to have enough money to go to Scranton and play their gig. You know.
Are you defending Metallica, Tom?
A little bit. I am such an unrepentant fan of the early Metallica stuff. But unfortunately, like now, I'd probably be better off going to see like the Four Horsemen, a loving tribute to Metallica, because they play the stuff I want to hear more than like the actual band playing in an arena sitting 500 yards away.
Well, I gotta say, this looks terrible for Metallica. It looks even worse for Ticketmaster, who's proven time and time again they're just thieves. And the answer is nothing's going to change. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And the only way to combat this is to vote with your dollar. And as people have shown time and time again, they don't care about this. Or if they do care about it, then it's kind of a symbol of the rising division between upper middle class or rich people and middle class. And upper middle class and rich people, you know, the $400 ticket, the $300 ticket, they don't really care about that. And so the richer people will just get whatever they want. And then, you know,
we've talked about this is people who go to two or three shows a year and then stay at a $400 hotel when they're done anyway, so they don't have to drive home. Yeah. So it's a different class. It's not so, you know, and the thing is, it doesn't have to be, you know, I buy tickets from all different ticket agencies. Ticketfly, Ticketweb are the most common ones here locally.
And Eventbrite.
But Eventbrite doesn't do physical tickets. That's the one bummer with Eventbrite.
Yeah, but I love it. I use it for all my events. I love Eventbrite.
The fees are very reasonable on Eventbrite.
Tom, you know what our fees for Summer Soiree 3 is, which is August 3? Guess what our
couple fees bucks?
Are? $1.50.
So I'll top that, John. My personal favorite is Brown Paper tickets. Now, nobody around here locally uses them, but I've gotten their tickets for a few things. I told you I'm going to see DRI down in Fort Wayne. Tickets are $10. Total cost $11.59 a ticket.
That's $1.59, Tom.
Yeah, but they're free, sent to me first class mail, no additional charge.
That's pretty good.
Because I started going to shows without my parents in 1989, which is 30 years ago now. So, and I don't have ticket stubs for everything I went to, but I have a hell of a lot of them. So when I'm given the choice, I still buy physical tickets. And I know some places it's just not possible anymore. And I'm only going to pay so much extra to get that physical ticket. But, yeah, I it's like sometimes the only reason I can remember that I went to a show is because I have a ticket.
Physical ticket prices now are up to like $5. And I'm like, is it really worth the $5 for the memento?
If you're ordering four of them, it's not that big a deal to pay an extra $3.50 to have them shipped. But if you're getting one ticket and you're already paying $14 of service charges.
Yeah. Tom, ticket prices are out of control. I don't think anyone can dispute that.
Unless you're a punk band, because then it's $5 for the last 20 years.
Well, yeah, I mean non-punk. You know, punk actually might be too cheap, to tell you the truth. But you know, mainstream music, ticket prices are out of control. Everyone agrees. Most people don't care. Is it ever going to become normalized again? I feel in the 90s, ticket prices were relatively fair, you know. Are ticket prices ever going to...
We went and saw the Rolling Stones. In 1992, I think it was Steel Wheels? 92?
Steel Wheels is 88, 89.
Well, I don't remember what tour it was. 92.
There was no tour in 92. 94 there was Voodoo Lounge.
Was it Voodoo Lounge? No, I'm Googling it right now. But anyway, the Rolling Stones played in Lansing, just a little... East Lansing at Michigan State University, just a little... more than like an hour and 15 minutes away, and it was a Friday night, and we were going to go, but there's two things that held us back. One, it was over 30, it was like $30+, which we lived through the breaking of the $30 barrier, and that was huge money. Like the first Lollapaloozas were like $30, dudes. So you could get a lot of, oh, you're right, 1994.
Hey, that's Voodoo Lounge.
September 9th. 1994, 25 years ago. But the tickets were over $30, which is a lot of money. And we, like, they're too old. You know, I was 20, 25 years ago. I guess we should have got in on that action. Anyway, I heard it was a phenomenal show. We should have went. But like I said, $30 was a lot of money in 1992. I was, or 1994. I was, you know, a 21-year-old guy trying to make my bones. So, but you see, yeah, I remember, I mean, going to see like Pink Floyd, it was $30. That was a lot of money. But now, any arena show, the good seats are $200. I blame a lot of that, like on the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac and a lot of these boomer, aging boomer bands. I remember when it was so, such a big deal. Eagles tickets, $100. Mitch, meanwhile, why don't you just, if you like the Eagles, why don't you just sit home and listen to the record? What do they give you live that you don't get
on the freaking record?
Yeah.
Well, as we discussed, a lot for most people that go to that kind of a show, they're there to have like fun. I suppose that's what you're. The
series oh, just get wasted.
Yeah, like you know, like at work, I'll talk about like at work, I'll say, oh, I went to this. They're like, wow, you go to a lot of concerts. He's like, what do you do at the concert? Like, it's like, well, it's not like when you go see Tom Petty, yeah, where you get beers and sing with your friend. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Well, and you're like, and a lot of them, you cringe at the term concert even.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't a concert, dude. I went to a show. What did the British say? Gig. But you go to a dive club. It's not a concert. I don't know. I think a concert, I think of arenas or
I make or no like distinction between show and concert. I say the
oh, I do. I never used I can't imagine the last time I used the word concert. Unless I was talking about, like, my daughter's choir.
I actually like using the term concert because the cool punk thing is to say show and saying concert is dorky. So I say concert just to be adversarial.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Okay, well, anyway, Metallica, they're jerks. Everyone hates them. Will affect anybody? Not at all. Meanwhile, speaking of someone that everybody loves, but it has made it somewhat of a confusing move, Iggy Pop, he's going to release a new album. People are kind of confused to begin with because he said his last album with the guy from Queens of the Stone Age was going to be his post-pop depression was going to be his very last album. And he's like, now I'm putting out another one. However, this new one is even kind of more confusing.
He's not really selling this, is he? He's not really putting a lot of effort into selling this.
So thing. Anyway, the new album is called, let's see here, Free. And it's uniquely somber and contemplative. Iggy Pop said, this is an album in which other artists speak for me, but I lend my voice. By the end of the tours following post-pop depression, I felt sure I had rid myself of the problem of chronic insecurity that had dogged my life and career for too long. But I also felt drained, and I felt like I wanted to put on shades, turn my back, and walk away. I wanted to be free. But I now know that's an illusion, and freedom is only something you can feel. But I have lived my life thus far in the belief that I've had that feeling is all about worth pursuing, all you need. Not happy lizard love necessarily, but the feeling of being free. So this album just kind of happened, and I let it happen. And he released a snippet. It's about a minute and 50 seconds long, and he's not even on the track, you know? And people are kind of suggesting that maybe he doesn't sing at all on this, and that like other people sing his lyrics or something, and no one seems to know. And Tom, two questions. Are you interested in an Iggy Pop album without Iggy Pop? But also, is Iggy in danger of kind of watering down his legacy? The counter argument is, you know what, though? Iggy Pop's got a lot of
Iggy Pop's water. His legacy's done been watered down, John.
I mean, he's got a lot of bad albums. So is another one on the pile going to make any difference at all?
I honestly don't even think, even though his what are considered his best albums have a lot of filler on them.
You think Lust for Life and The Idiot have filler?
Yes.
Oh, I absolutely love those albums. I think those albums are
I'm not saying I don't love – love's a strong word. I like both those albums, but, you know, he was going a different direction, and I don't know. I'm an Iggy fan, definitely, but, yeah, this is – you know, I don't think Iggy is a pretentious guy. If this was – imagine if Morrissey put out this statement.
People would rip him to shreds.
You'd be like, screw this guy, but – I don't. I mean, I don't see him that way. Maybe he is, but this. I gotta tell you, man. This just not. I'm not interested in this. And I've heard some of his dark, contemplative stuff, honestly. And I don't hate it, but I don't. I'm not looking forward to this.
I'm interested in seeing what it is. I mean, I'm not gonna buy it unless it's amazing. But I don't think it will be. I hope he's not falling into that territory that, to some degree, Lee Scratch Perry and Nick Turner have fallen into. And that, like, Lee Scratch Perry, he puts out, like, four albums a year, but he doesn't really. Like someone will pay him to come into the studio for, like, 3 hours, and he'll just say random shit on the microphone, and then that person will take that. I'm not even kidding. They'll take, like, his sayings and put them over top of beats or whatever.
And so, they'll sell it as a Lee Scratch Perry album?
Yes, but is it really? Like, not really. You know what I mean?
I mean, I mean, I'm not looking to diss Lee Scratch Perry because I know he's a crucial artist and all that. But I mean, is that name really selling the records at this point?
Well, good question. The answer is to a degree, yes, and that it'll get
you. I mean, maybe more so than Random DJ, who nobody has heard of.
But I mean, it'll get you distribution, and that like a lot of records, physical records, still are sold through distribution, and so the buyer will say, Lee Scratch Perry, let's buy that. Cause, I mean, but Lee Scratch Perry isn't selling 100,000 copies, but is he going to move 8,000 units? Maybe. You know, so that you know, that's $80,000
enough to make some money. Yeah.
Right. You know, so
I just the business is so weird now. You know, I just saw a statement. One of my favorite bands, I'm sure you've heard of them, John, even if you're not real familiar with their catalog, The Freeze. They were originally from Boston, started out in the late 70s, made their best records probably in the 80s, but have been around more or less consistently. They moved to Arizona and they've been in Arizona for the last 15 years or something. The key members. But they just put out this big statement about how they had to cancel their European tour because none of the promoters over there knew that they had a new album out. And I'm just like, what punk band is touring behind their new album? Or is that a European thing? Because like in the United States, people get pissed when you play new songs when you go on tour, you know? If the when the Freeze tour America, nobody wants to hear anything that came out after 1995. What do you think about that, John?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a totally...
I mean, could that really be? Oh, we weren't selling any tickets at all, so we're just going to make this
well,
up.
Well, listen, the Freeze, they were relatively inactive for too long. I think you can't take 20 years off unless your band's called Fear, or you know, unless you had like a huge album. I think it's hard to take that big of a gap.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I know there's tens of people like me in every major metropolitan area who are dying to see them, but I don't know if they can afford to tour. You know,
here's an interesting fact who I learned not too long ago. So let's say that and Europe is kind of famous for this. Like, give me an example of a punk band that is semi like not adolescents, but like the level of the adolescent, like Agent Orange, right? So let's say the bass player from Agent Orange is playing, and I don't even know his name. Let's call it Bill Jones, right?
It's not the original guy, obviously.
So let's just say it is, right? So Bill Jones is playing Europe, and it'll put like Bill Jones of Agent Orange, and they'll put Agent Orange bigger than Bill Jones.
Yeah.
Agent Orange, the band, gets mad about that because no one goes to see Bill Jones. And like things get kind of mixed up. So when Agent Orange proper tries to tour Europe, none of the promoters want to book them because they're like, well, Bill Jones was here and no one cared. So why should we book Agent Orange, you see? So,
you know, those Orange County bands all changed members so fast. I believe that one of the Sotos played on the classic first Agent Orange album.
I think all those OC and Nardcore bands, I think it's all just one band, basically. It's like seven guys in different formations. But listen, Iggy Pop, I kind of hope he doesn't descend to this thing where, like, his albums become just kind of throwaway things and it's less and less him, you know? Like, I mean, his late...
Not everything can be Skull Ring, John.
Well, I mean, his late period career has actually been fairly respectable.
Post-pop, I agree, man. I'm joking about Skull Ring, but I like Skull Ring. I thought it had some. It wasn't consistent all the way through, but it had some great songs on it.
Is that 2003 or 96? I forget.
I was in the 2000s.
So that's like 2003.
And I did. And what was the last one he had? Was it called Moving Target? I can't remember what it was called, but it had like a him. No, before that would have been maybe like early 2010s. No, I'm thinking the Iggy and the Stooges album. They made the Stooges album, The Weirdness, and then they made the Iggy and the Stooges album. I can't remember what it was called.
Oh yeah, honestly, that was kind of.
But it had same thing. Had some good songs on it, but there's a song on The Weirdness that I think holds its own with any of their stuff. You know,
Also Mio, right? I love that song.
No, what's the one? My Idea of Fun, I think it's called. Oh, I love that song. That one?
I've got the vinyl record, Tom. So I had it like that,
Well, I have it on 5-inch plastic.
so, anyways, though, I don't know. I just hope Iggy kind of like in the eighties and nineties, like there's so much semi-official Iggy Pop junk, just pure crap, you know, like these weird bootlegs and semi-bootlegs. I hope he doesn't like just put out a bunch of releases that no one cares about and just kind of fade away. I don't know.
He's one of those artists where I probably, because there's a really good two disc anthology. I can't remember what it's called.
Million of Prizes, the anthology.
Nude and Rude, or yeah, and so I don't know. There's a couple of different ones because I have select albums of his. I probably have a half dozen Iggy Pop albums, but you know, there's probably 15 or 20 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And official, honestly, right?
A lot of them aren't that good, you know. But
no, what, I know it. I just want like the highlights.
Honestly, well, listen. If you're listening, if you want to get an Iggy, here's what you need: the first Stooges
but
album.
I don't want a solo stuff. I don't want. I have all the Stooges stuff. I don't want. You know what I mean? I want an anthology, like a double disc anthology with no Stooges stuff.
If you're listening, you want to. If you want to get an Iggy, you want to listen to the first Stooges album, Mind Blowing. Second Stooges album, Funhouse, Mind Blowing. Third Stooges album, Raw Power. You want to make sure you get the David Bowie mix version. Amazing album. Almost as good, but not quite as good, is Iggy Pop and James Williamson doing, what the hell's the name of that record? It's actually a
Kill
demo.
City.
Kill City.
Kill City, right?
Yeah, very good, not amazing, very good. Also, get the first two Iggy Pop records, Lust for Life, which is almost like a Stooges record. It's amazing. And The Idiot is actually like a David Bowie record with Iggy Pop singing. That's also.
You think Lust for Life is a Stooges?
Yeah, it rocks.
The guitar is not front and center, though.
Well, I'm saying it's more
It's a different musical style.
It's a rock. I mean, it's a rock album. Whereas The Idiot is kind of more almost like kraut rock or almost electronic at some points.
But I mean, even the song "Lust for Life," it's got like a dance beat or something. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Me? It's got a classic big band drum beat.
Well, I don't know.
That is as rock as it gets, Tom. So, anyways, but I mean, they
really a big band drum beat is as rock as it gets, John.
Those drums on "Lust for Life" are some of the most famous rock drums ever. So much so that some band ripped them off and got sued for it. Anyways, so yeah. The Stooges rule of Iggy Pop rules. After that, you don't really need anything. He's got a couple of interesting live albums, but be very careful. There's so much just Stooges garbage. You
know, there's a few, like Brick by Brick was pretty good.
That album's boring. I mean, honestly, if you compare it to Lust for Life or the Stooges, it's just boring and pointless.
Well, anyways, there's some good stuff. Find a nice double disc anthology.
Well, anyways, I say get those albums. Forget the anthology. Get the albums, the classic ones. Anyway, speaking of classic albums, the Beastie Boys are going to re-release super rare material from one classic album and one semi-classic album. They're releasing a whole bunch of they're calling them EPs, but it's digital only streaming from Paul's Boutique. It's the Love American Style EP and a bunch of remixes and a couple of rare live tracks. They're also re-releasing every B-side from To the Five Boroughs. All those are going to be digital only and not physical. Meanwhile, Tegan and Sarah, they're going to put out a new album. The new album is called, give me one second. The new album is called Hey, I'm Just Like You, and it's the sisters re-recording tracks they wrote in high school. They've released one song so far, and I think it's real good. They're also apparently, not definitely, but apparently just doing digital streaming only. So for all three of these releases, you can't even buy the download, and you can't buy it off Bandcamp. It's Spotify only so far. That might change. Tom, here's the weird thing. Major label art, Beastie Boys are big. I mean, they're not quite as big as they were in the 90s, per se, but they're still a big band. Major label artists aren't even doing physical releases now. And with Beasties, you would think they'd put out deluxe CD versions of To the Five Boroughs like they did with Ill Communication and Check Your Head and Hello Nasty. But apparently that's not even profitable anymore. How insane is that?
See, is it not profitable, John? Or do they not care about the profit? Are they set and don't?
One would think that if the Beastie Boys care about the artistic legacy, which I would argue that their entire career, but especially the post-end of the band years, shows that they care about the artistic legacy a great deal, they'd want to put out a very nice physical product. Because the other re-releases, the Check Your Head, Ill Communication, Hello Nasty, and the Paul's Boutique reissues, were beautifully, beautifully and expertly done, and also done with a fan's attention to mind. You know what I mean?
And the fact of the matter is, they could sell six figures worth. I mean, they sell a lot of them.
Can they? Then why aren't they?
Sure. They love American Style. They could sell easily make a limited edition 1,000 on a 12-inch and sell it out.
But they could do that for Record Store Day for sure. Yeah.
I don't know what the motivation is here. You know, it's funny. You know, they do have such a strange legacy, because their best-known album is the one that they've spent their entire career trying to distance themselves from, their best-selling album that sold something like 10 million copies, made them rich men. You know, License to Ill is the album that made those guys rich. And I know it's not necessarily a fair representation of their entire career, but
Ill Communication and Hello Nasty made them rich again a second and third time.
Yeah, but are either of those, I mean, they might be platinum, but they weren't like 10 times platinum like License to Ill.
Hello Nasty was a gigantic selling album, Tom. in the 90s, nonetheless, where bands were really making crazy money.
Yeah. But no, I don't know. I think, it is interesting. You'd think public outcry from their hardcore fans would at least have them, make a couple thousand copies on vinyl or something. But I don't know. Maybe that it's been too far removed since they put out new music, you know?
Three times platinum for Hello Nasty.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the hit? Was there hits on it?
Intergalactic, maybe you've heard of it, Tom?
I thought that was on either Ill Communication or...
No, Ill Communication.
Check Your Head.
Ill Communication is Sabotage. Check Your Head is what you want.
Oh, no kidding. You know, I have an old... I have a handful of their LPs, and then I have like this two-disc thing called Sound of Science.
Yeah.
And man, that thing is out of print and goes for big money.
No, you can get it pretty cheap for like $5, Tom. Sound of Science.
Oh, really? Okay, I swear I saw it on Discogs. It was going.
You might have seen the rare custom mix version where you could make your own custom version.
I'm not selling mine anyway. I'm not listening to it or selling it.
Then how about Tegan and Sarah? How come they're not putting out like a physical version of their new record?
I guess for them. You know, the Beastie Boys is a little bit strange because they can't recoup their money touring. Tegan and Sarah's making their money touring.
Yeah.
Giving away that free music might pay off in the form of bodies at the show.
Tom, actually, that's
there has to be a breaking point. It's,
That's a great point you just raised there, is that maybe albums now are solely promotion. Tours used to be promotion for the album, but now maybe the album is solely a promotional tool to get people to come to the concert. But then, Tom, what's the unintended result of that going to be? Or the intended result of that going to be?
I don't know.
Ticket prices shoot way up.
Yeah. I guess. But if you're not laying out the... I don't know. These bands are... Tegan and Sarah especially are not really in my orbit. I saw the Beastie Boys back in the day, but once again, not really something I listen to a ton anymore.
One thing about Tegan and Sarah, man, I mean, I'm not going to be on this drum all day long.
I know you love Tegan and Sarah, and I'm just indifferent to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
Actually, that's not true. Their pop music, I don't care for at all.
Have you heard
the Lego song, and I heard that Closer song. Those are the two songs I've heard.
You know the Lego song is a Devo song, Tom.
The Everything is Excellent or whatever it is?
Music by Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo with Tegan and Sarah providing vocals.
Hmm. But it wasn't like recorded by Devo back in the day.
No, it was recorded by Mark Mothersbaugh recently. And wow.
I was gonna say, I'm like, that was an old Devo? Really?
And I interviewed him about that for Rolling Stone magazine, Tom. What do you think of that?
That's cool.
Living in my past glories. But listen, one thing about Tegan and Sarah, two things bother me about Tegan and Sarah, and that like all the punks are like, why are you talking about Tegan and Sarah? Like Tegan and Sarah were like people talk about Tegan and Sarah all the time in the punk scene with The Con and So Jealous. It's like you forgot, not me, you know.
Well, they changed, John. They changed.
But then the other thing
they're chasing the dollar. They're chasing the
I don't think they're chasing the dollar. I think they wanted to do something new, and it frankly didn't quite work out for them. But also for Tegan and Sarah is people are like, this is stupid, this is pop. But then, when Chuck Reagan or Brian Fallon does like acoustic guy crying about his girlfriend, they're like, oh, this is so great, this is so wonderful. It's like there's no difference between Chuck Reagan singing about being a loser and Tegan and Sarah singing about their emotions. It's the same thing.
Oh, come on, that's more of like a stripped down like throwback to classic country, though. I think it's a bad analogy.
How is
you're talking like overproduced, sickly sweet pop music compared to
Tom, that's not all Tegan and Sarah do. Tegan and Sarah used to be an acoustic act, just like Lars Stevenson.
They used to be.
Yeah, but I'm saying.
And Chuck Reagan used to play punk rock.
The new album is acoustic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
I'm saying it's a double standard, and it's all clear.
Listen, you're a Tegan and Sarah defender, and that's fine.
I'm not a defender. They're great.
I disagree about their greatness.
Like when someone says, oh, you're a so-and-so defender, it's implied that the band actually isn't as great as you think they are. But they are. Tegan and Sarah are awesome. And to prove it, here's a track by Tegan and Sarah. I'm going to play. I don't know if I'm going to play.
Everything is awesome.
I mean, that's cool. So maybe I don't know. We'll play something by Tegan and Sarah. Probably something off The Con or So Jealous. They're a great band. This is Tegan and Sarah. Go listen to them. Check it out. And we're back, Tom and I.
Tegan and Sarah is so great, I'm going to play a 10-year-old track to prove it.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Yes, I'm breaking your balls.
Tom, you just yeah. played like a 35-year-old track by DRI.
Yeah, but I don't deny it. I don't deny that. That's I am set in my ways to a certain extent. You ever do that thing where you, like, somebody on Facebook or someone will say, like post your 10 favorite records of all time or something and just put the cover and don't leave a comment or whatever it was that was going around. I think I made it to like 6 and then just abandoned it because I suck at these things.
See, I don't know why you would, I've seen that meme or whatever it is. It's like, well, why wouldn't you like put a comment about it? Like, isn't that what's interesting is why that's that
part? Yeah, exactly. Why? I mean, oh, here's a picture of the Walk Among Us album cover. And I got like 6 albums in. It was like, you know, Sex Pistols and you know, Misfits. You know, those albums, and all my, like, when I was looking at my favorite albums, they all came out in about a 3-year window when I was in my mid-teens or late teens, you know? It's like, those are when the albums really hit you and connect you to you at a level that I could probably never connect with an album at my age now.
Tom, there's one place where you can just post the cover of Walk Among Us and people will love you for it. That's all you gotta do.
Yeah, exactly. Get like... Dude, I was on. I made a comment on Loudwire today earlier, which I didn't even know Loudwire was so popular. And it was 2 albums that came out on the same day, and it was Pantera's "Cowboys from Hell" and Avenged Sevenfold "Sounding of the Seven Trumpets" or something. And it said which album they both came out on the same day, but only one could be better. And I wrote something about. I said I'm pretty sure even the guys from Avenged Sevenfold will tell you that "Cowboys from Hell" was better. And I got over 700 likes.
Wow, Tom, you should leverage that into some kind of financial deal.
I guess. I mean, that's crazy, right? 700. Oh, my gosh.
Tom,
who knew that Loudwire had so many followers?
Are you saying that you're going to become like a YouTube star or something where you'll just talk about 2 albums and say which is better?
Yeah. I'm at 755 likes.
I'm proud of you, Tom. You're doing – but listen.
I mean, who knew that Loudwire was so popular? I mean, whatever. But anyway – Cowboys from Hell, definitely better than whatever Avenged Sevenfold album.
Speaking of things that are popular, Ceremony, they've released a new a track, and the new track is a remix of a song they haven't released yet. The song is called Further I Was. It's going to be part of their new album, which is called Spears in the Material World, out in August. The remix is called the Synth Remix, and I got to say, man, I dug this Synth Remix. I mean,
Spirits in the Material World, like the Police song.
Yeah, it is like the Police song, and honestly, there's probably some... tortured, like super, like academic, like oh, this is why we talked about, you know what I mean? It's like, but anyways,
we're not inspired by the Police. We're inspired by the same novel that inspired the Police.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. And honestly, that's one area of attack on Ceremony. They're a little self-important, if you will. But that being said, man, I dug this new song, and I'm hoping the whole album is kind of like this dark new wave thing. It's definitely not hardcore. It's straight up like dark wave or new wave or whatever you want to call it. But I dug this track, and I think Ceremony is finally going someplace really interesting again.
You know, I listened to it right before we started, and I guess my question is, why wouldn't you just listen to a band that always had this sound? Why do I have to listen to a hardcore band play New Order? Why don't I just listen to New Order?
Here's the answer, Tom. Well, actually, I don't think New Order is the best comparable to this, because if you listen to New Order, like, New Order is actually more dancey. This isn't really that dance. It's kind of more new.
Dude, wave. This has very little darkness to it.
Well, the point being is most bands that people think of as 80s bands, when you actually listen to them, they're either like not what you think they are, like Flock of Seagulls or like Gary Numan or even New Order. New Order is actually kind of heavier than most people think they are,
they were dark, yeah.
The second half, they're actually like super heavy, but then like the second half of their career, it's all like stupid, terrible dance music.
Synthy, yeah.
You know? But this is kind of like a pastiche of the 80s, but it's the high point of the 80s. So I think you'd have a hard time like finding a band that actually sounds like this. I think the only comparison might be the first Ministry album, which I love.
Yeah, I could see that. It's got a little first album. My least favorite Ministry album, but
favorite Ministry album.
Really,
I love that.
Apparently, you've never heard "The Mind Is a Terrible Thing to Taste."
I've heard it. Honestly, it's too repetitive for me.
It is a little repetitive, but it still was an album worthy of me putting a picture of the album cover without leaving a comment.
Anyway, Tom, do you think Ceremony
came out when I was 15 years old, John?
So Ceremony is facing an interesting challenge, a challenge that Effed Up kind of faced as well, and Effed Up probably didn't quite succeed on the challenge. And that Ceremony's old fan base is hardcore. And the hardcore fan base, they hated the last two records. And so Ceremony is kind of trying to reinvent themselves with a whole new audience, if you will. Maybe some of the hardcore guys will come over, but most of them aren't. Effed Up tried to kind of do that with like indie pop, indie rock, but the indie rock guys kind of didn't stick around for the party. Do you think Ceremony's gambit is going to work, and are they being daring enough or too daring? I say they're being daring enough, and I dig it. Will this give them a new era of the band? The answer is no, I think, because cool people, quote, cool people, never really like true punk. I mean, like the Pitchfork crowd, they talk about punk all the time, but they never really listen to actual punk, and same with like other websites as well.
Well, I don't know, John. I don't see this getting into the rotation at my house, but I didn't think it was terrible. I just don't see myself listening to it. Well, I'm not a Ceremony guy, so I can't really speak to it in the general, you know, in the bigger picture of their career. But if they started out as a hardcore band and ended up at this, I can't imagine I would have been able to follow them that entire journey.
They've had a trajectory that's similar to Effed Up in that they've changed quite a bit. Effed Up, though, was still like a rock band at their core, like they always were. Ceremony, perhaps not totally. But I'm glad they're doing something interesting, and I'm rooting for them. I hope this album is cool. Here's something else, Tom. This band, Aerial View, they've released a new track called Friday Nights. The new album is going to be on Epitaph. The new album is going to be called they've got a new album coming out on Epitaph. Tom, the Punk News commenters like this track. And I got to say, they did. And I got to say, there really is a disconnect between the editors and maybe even the writers and the actual commenters. Do we need to be concerned about that? Or, I mean, I feel like the writers and the...
Are our readers 12-year-old girls? Because this sounds like something that a 12-year-old girl would listen to.
Here's the comments. I mean... I like this a lot. What a lovely surprise. Quite enjoyable. This is great. And also, Tom, we've had a whole bunch of new trolls up here lately. And do you have any idea why?
I don't. You know, it's. I'm somebody who loves to get in there and mix it up with the commenters.
You say that, but you never do. You do like once.
No. I mean, not fight with them, but I mean, get cocky, get kind of, you know, joke around with them. But we've had such a tremendous turnover, I hardly recognize anybody anymore. And yeah, you don't know who's like cool and who's a dick, so I haven't been nearly as much, but I don't know where they came from. No, John, I think it's just they just keep replenishing themselves. But I miss some of the old Weisenheimers from years past.
I don't.
Yeah, I know. And you know, I used to say once or twice a year I'd let myself get dragged into a brawl. But I think it's been a couple of years. I just, you know, once in a while, especially as a review writer, once in a while somebody will say something and you'll just want to fight with them about it. But I rarely do. And, you know, we've already talked about the fact that, you know, sometimes you really like a band and want to help them out. And you'll premiere a track or you'll write a nice piece about them. And the first comment is just like, oh, these guys suck. And you're just like, ugh. I was just going to send this off to this band and show them this cool piece I wrote about them. And the first comment is somebody dissing them.
I will say, if you look at the musical taste of the biggest trolls, they love orgcore and they love bullshit, kind of like this. And so there is a big conflict between the music that the editors like and most of the writers like is very different than the music that the commenters like. But again, the commenters is not the same as readers. They're actually very different. But is that something we need to even worry about?
There's a wide variety. I mean, you know. The fact of the matter is you and I have wildly different tastes, John, and we're more similar than we are with a lot of our writers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a wide, you know, from, you know, Ronaldo and his emo to, you know, a lot of the younger people came in. A lot of the younger people, their gateway was like, you know, they think the punk was like Blink-182 and Newfound Glory and stuff like that.
I wish we had more.
And I think that's fine. I don't have a problem with that being your gateway band, but you gotta go backwards from there. Even when I got into punk about 10 years after, about in like 87, after the movement had been going for 10 years, man, I felt the need to go back. Or it's not true, actually. First Wave was the first stuff I heard. But you know what I mean? It's like get into Rancid, yeah, but go back and it's hard to respect these kids that don't know their roots, you know.
Well, we discussed this briefly years ago on the podcast, and this is really an interesting dynamic. I think my generation was the last generation to get, like you get into punk. Oh, you don't have All Crass Records, then you're a poser. Oh, you don't have this weird bootleg by, you know, Flux of Pink Indians, you're a poser. Get out of here. We don't want you here. You know, like, you had to know everything, you know? But now kids getting into punk, like, their response is, oh, I don't know about Crass. I don't know about Clash. I don't even know about Black Flag or even, like late 80s or early 90s bands, and I don't care. And the fact that you're talking about them, you know, makes you stupid, you know? And so,
you saying your generation was the last like that, but do you think that was even true of your generation or maybe your small circle or your, you know,
it was true of the punks of my generation. Yes.
Okay.
But like, if you look at like, you know, like Stafford Sean, like, well, actually Stafford Sean's a pretty bright kid, but like people of his,
he is a bright kid, but the music he likes makes me want to bash my head against the wall.
But like, I'm sure his friends.
He's a great kid. I'd adopt him if he needed a place to live.
Like his friend. Well, actually, he's over 18, I think. So you can adopt.
No, he's 19 years old. He's about to start his second year of college. I mean, when he started with us, he was in high school.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
When we had sleepovers, it made things awkward.
I mean, like the youth of today, if you will, they don't care about the history at all. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I guess it's kind of both. I mean, I guess you should write your own history. And I guess that would be more acceptable if the music they liked wasn't so damn wimpy. You know what I mean?
At least the first wave of punks turned against the music that came before them. But these kids are just indifferent to it, you know. No Beatles, no Stones, no Elvis.
Honestly, you know? That's not a true statement. I mean, I know that's the statement, but it's not even true. Like the Sex Pistols loved Alice Cooper and the Stooges and Hawkwind. You know, yeah. like the Ramones.
Well, you had to get your Hawkwind. I got my Danzig reference in. You had to get your Hawkwind reference.
You know, Danzig loved the New York Dolls, Patti Smith, that kind of a thing. You know, so like they weren't really turning against. I guess they were turning against the most commercial stuff of the day. You know what I mean? But anyways, let's talk about one last thing: commercial stuff. Tom, Discogs has released the report of the most expensive cassette tapes ever sold on Discogs. The most expensive cassette tape ever sold on Discogs was a Prince Rare promo cassette called the Versace Experience Prelude to Gold. It sold for $4,100. Interestingly, the third most expensive cassette tape sold on Discogs is really neat. It's the Throbbing Gristle 24 box set. And what that is, it's 26 tapes of the last, at the time you bought them, the previous 24 live performances all put together on a tape, in a box set. So each box set is personalized and different. So if you bought the first box set, you'd have like a set of tapes. But if you waited a year and bought that box set, it would have different tapes inside, more recent ones. So I think it's like really neat and interesting. But by contrast, the most expensive record ever sold is $2 million, which makes $4,100 look like, you know, a couple of pennies. Tom, would you ever spend $4,000 for a cassette tape?
No way.
Would you spend it for a record?
I don't really have that kind of money to spend, so no, I wouldn't.
What's the most you'll spend for a record, Tom?
Here's the thing, John. I am interested in playable records.
Yeah, yeah.
To listen to and to play and enjoy. Almost every record I buy, I already have the CD of. $30.
Would you spend $30 on cassette tape?
No way. I wouldn't spend 2 cents on this cassette tape.
But why? I mean, the music was
I don't have a cassette player. I'm not into cassettes. I went through the complete, you know, the first time I joined RCA Record Club, back before it became BMG, I got vinyl records. This was mid-80s. And then my dad didn't want me using his record player, so I got tapes. And then in like 87 or whatever, we bought our first CD player, four times oversampling. It was the most state-of-the-art thing there was. So I converted over to that. So I've gone through all the different formats. And while I must say I've waffling between CDs and vinyl lately, and I'm kind of buying both, not the same releases necessarily, I am not going back to cassettes. I don't know. I have no nostalgia for the format.
Tom, I
fully participated in the format in the mid 80s.
Tom, you're in the record store. Colin McFall of Cox Bar happens to be in there. He's like, Tom, great to see you. Look what I just put out. And he shows you a cassette tape, and it is a professionally recorded cassette tape of Cox Bar during the Shock Troops tour. Would you buy
only it? Available on cassette?
Only available on cassette, and he's only.
I don't have a cassette player, John.
So you wouldn't buy it.
I mean, to not feel like a dick in front of Colin McFall, then yes, I would.
Well, all right, so he's like, Tom, I'm just going
to... I had peer pressure. How much is it? It's got to be less than $10, Tom, right? I mean, come on.
He says, I'm just going to leave this next to the cash register, and I'm going to leave. But, Tom, I think you should buy it. And he leaves. Do you buy it?
Probably not.
Really?
I had that issue, John. They put Burger Records, which I know is one of your favorite, and yes. I like them too. They put out some cool stuff. They put out a rare Necros album, which I love Necros. They were from Northern Ohio, but they were associated with the Detroit scene. They did a full tour with the Misfits. Great, great band. All their records are kind of lost to history. They were all on Touch and Go, and due to band issues, they never have been reissued. They should be. They're great, great early.
One of the band members committing murder?
Great early 80s punk. No, it's like the singer just doesn't want. I don't know. Something's keeping them from putting them out. But anyway, what the hell? Oh, what the hell was my point, Jeff? Oh, anyway, Burger put out a rare live album recorded in the 80s, and they put it on a cassette, and I just couldn't do it. So I never got the album.
I'm surprised by that. I mean, that's why I got into – the reason I got into cassettes was because Burger was putting out some interesting-looking cassettes of bands that I didn't even know about, and that's how I got into The Garden, and that's how I got into it. So
they do some vinyl, too. But, yeah, I don't know. Instead, I found, like, a disgruntled old guitar player who, like, bootlegged me there, who was selling bootleg CDs of their entire vinyl output on one CD.
You can buy that Necros album on record, you know, that live album.
Can you?
Yeah, $17.
Oh, that's not bad. From Burger?
From Jet Plastic Records.
Live in 85.
Live in 85, baby.
Jet Plastic. Oh, that's out of Detroit. Good for them.
So anyways, or you can even buy it for $12. Anyways, as to cassettes are
$4.99. All right, let me check this out.
Cassettes are crappier than records because they break and they sound worse and they go bad. But that being said, they're cool. I actually did spend a fair amount for a cassette once because it was the Dwarves demo cassette. That there's only like 25 of them or something, but I wouldn't spend crazy amounts on a cassette.
John, they have it in stock at a record store that's not that far of a drive for me.
Tom, you should go buy it.
I might have to go do that.
All right, Tom, anything else we need to address on tonight's podcast aside from expensive cassette tapes?
I need to check the condition on this real quick.
While we're on the podcast.
Near mint and very good plus. No, I don't think we have anything else to say, John. I enjoyed freestyling tonight. Once again, without Adam to keep us on track, I feel like we wandered far and wide. You know, the one thing I wanted to add to the Metallica thing, and I told this story before, but when Metallica played Grand Rapids last time, tickets were $135, right? And it sold out in presale. So did it really sell out in presale, John? Or did all those tickets get sold to a second party?
I think the proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
Well, then I'm glad I didn't give my money to a second party, because here's the way it works with these local shows, and you know this. Usually the venues themselves have a box office. You can go to the box office and get tickets fee free. So I was holding out hope. I'm like, well, if there's any tickets left, once they go on sale to the public, I'll be the first one there and I'll get some tickets. But alas, it wasn't to be. You want to see DRI instead.
Well, Tom, I hope you have fun at DRI, and we will see you next week.
See you later.